Welcome to the first episode of Nos Audietis. It's a Sounder at Heart produced podcast. I'm Jeremiah O'Shan, a writer and editor at Sounder at Heart, as well as SB Nation Soccer. And with me today is, as always, is going to be Aaron Campo, who also writes for Sounder at Heart. And you may know him from his Aston Villa blog, 7500 to Holt. Just might as well get started here. The big news right now surrounding the Sounders is the injuries to Steve Zakuani and Brad Evans, which, as we know, were both suffered in the final preseason game, which otherwise was a great game. Sounders win 3-1, but it's hard to feel too good about that when we lose two potential starters. And of those two, it looks like Zakuani's injury is a little more serious. They're calling it the exact words they used were small tear of the adductor longus, which I'm told basically means he has a groin strain. And as anyone knows that follows sports, groin strains can be hugely debilitating in that they stick around for a long time and keep guys off the field, or they can be minor annoyances that are not so big of a deal. But what it does is it brings up this very clear issue that we didn't really want to talk. I don't think anyone really wanted to find just out how much depth this team really has. And, you know, Aaron, who do you think, like, what's the scenario? Let's assume Steve Zakuani is not going to play on Tuesday. Who do you think is the likely replacement, and who would you like to see playing?
Well, it's a tough question because Zakuani has been the left midfielder for this team pretty much the entire time he's been here. And there's not really anyone on this roster that I'm especially comfortable with just sliding right into that spot. I think the ideal backup to Zakuani at that position is probably Mike Fusito, but he has the same injury that Zakuani has to a much more severe degree, so that's probably not going to work out, at least for this game. And so really you're just kind of left with having to shoehorn someone in there that doesn't necessarily play that position. Rosales, I guess, is an option. I know that that's his most comfortable position, but, you know, we don't really know anything about him in terms of how he looks with this team. Freeburg would be my assumption at the best option, but apparently that's not a direction that the team wants to go. So really you're kind of stuck with Brad Evans if he's able to play. I'm not really thrilled with that, to be honest. I don't really see him as a wide midfielder at all. He's definitely more of a box-to-box, water carrier sort of guy. And he's good in that role, but I don't think, especially with how much the Sounders depend on Zakuani's speed, because he's really the only guy on the team right now that has any speed since Fusito is out. It's really kind of a nasty situation, honestly, and it kind of worries me.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we talked a lot in the, you know, we've talked a lot in general around the Sounders about their depth. And we've talked a lot about how this is a team that's built for multiple competitions. And it's funny because we weren't expecting to be tested, have that depth tested so early. But beyond that, you realize pretty quickly that when we're talking about depth, I think we're really talking about some key positions. I mean, we're talking about we like the depth at center midfield, I think, specifically the more attacking of those two center midfield spots. We like our depth at forward in that we have, you know, four or five pretty legitimate MLS caliber forwards. We have three very good center backs. But, you know, really outside of the spine position, so to speak, it's actually kind of dicey once you get beyond the starters. Like, I mean, I don't know who the obvious backup to Alvaro Fernandez is. I don't know who there's obviously not a clear backup to Steve Zakuani. I don't think anyone's particularly enthused about the backup goalie position, and they're not really very excited about the backup at either fullback position. And I think that you know, it's easy to get excited on some level about our depth when you think about Michael Tetez being a depth guy, but it's a little less exciting. I don't think anyone wants to see Michael Tedde playing in week one.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally when people talk about the depth, they talk about the depth in terms of being able to compete in multiple competitions without, you know, destroying the fitness of the starters. And that's a wonderful thing, but, I mean, you're right. There isn't a lot of depth at the wide positions, and even though the spine of the team is really important to what, you know, Siggy tries to do with the attack, the wide midfielders especially are equally as important, I think. Zach Tawani beating guys is really, against certain teams, the only way we've been able to compete in the past. He can take over a game. He's really the only player on this team, I think, that can do that, even if he's not the best player, just because of his physical attributes. And when you lose that, it's a pretty scary thing. You know, the fullback depth, the fullback situation on this team is just awful. You know, James Riley is James Riley, and I think most people love James Riley on a certain level and also understand his limitations. Really, he's probably the best backup at right midfield, but then you're in a situation where, you know, who's going to play right back now?
Left back, sorry.
Do we have anyone capable of playing that position at a non-terror-inducing level? I mean, it's Leo Gonzalez isn't that great anymore. I'd hate to say that, but I haven't seen any sign that his performance at the end of last season was an aberration based on his performances in preseason, and that more than anything, I think, worries me going into this year. One injury, you know, at a wide position that keeps somebody out for an extended period of time is gonna be really bad and really ugly.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason for our concerns, and maybe this isn't part of your reason, but at least part of my reasoning for this concern, is that, you know, you saw us play the Vancouver Whitecaps just on Sunday, and we used mostly reserves there, and we went down 2-0 in the first, what, 6 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, it was not a particularly confidence-inspiring performance at all.
No, and I mean, those players, you know, the guys that were out on the field weren't guys that we don't expect to see. They were very much players that we expect to see playing at some point.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a little worrisome to think that the Whitecaps, who, you know, up until a few weeks ago, everyone thought were going to be the worst team in the league, just basically had their way with the Sounders for, you know, at least, you know, I didn't really watch the whole game, but all the reports, at least the first half, the Sounders just kind of got kind of taken apart.
Yeah, the Sounders were able to kind of work their way back into the mix towards the end of the game, but at that point, they were playing some starters. And, you know, it is definitely worrisome, because it's not like Vancouver was playing a team of regulars either. Now, it might be that the gap between their regulars and reserve players is not quite as big as with other teams, but, you know, they didn't look terrible against Portland. They weren't the most exciting team in the world, but they looked like they could be competitive, which was a little bit of a surprise, honestly. And then, you know, for them to come back the next day and really make the Sounders look bad, after the Sounders didn't look all that great against Portland on Friday night, was a little concerning. The Community Shield game kind of erased a little bit of that doubt, but it's still not what I expected to see at all, especially from those reserve players, who a lot of them are, you know, fighting for a spot.
No, it's funny to think that we lost to the Timbers and Whitecaps, and then came back and beat the defending MLS Cup champions. I don't know that that really tells us a whole lot, other than MLS is probably going to be as wide open as it has ever been this year. And maybe, you know, maybe the Timbers and the Whitecaps aren't as bad as, you know, there's a certain assumption that expansion teams are going to go through struggles and that the Sounders were this grand exception. But maybe the Sounders model is a little bit more of a template that those guys can follow, because they, you know, there is some continuity from their old teams, and they have, you know, a much more established base. Although I'm still very skeptical that a team can survive with the level of lower division players that they're using this year. But, you know, I guess that's a that there'll be interesting case studies. Not to get too far off the subject.
Yeah, I don't expect Vancouver to be very good at all. But the way Vancouver is built, most of their quality is at the back. And if you can stay in games, you can surprise a lot of teams. And yeah. I definitely see them more as a team that, you know, maybe a team that's competing for the Supporters Shield goes to Vancouver and loses 1-0. I see them as that kind of threat. And, you know, I think that they're doing a lot of smart things with the way they're building the team. I think that their performance during the Cascadia Summit was a bit of an aberration, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly have not been, their scoring at the Cascadia Summit, at least against the Sounders, seems to have been an aberration. I don't know that they've scored 3 goals in a game all preseason, which another thing is to maybe be concerned about is this, you know, that kind of another thing that highlights just how, you know, how much depth do we really have when we gave up 3 goals to a team of reserves on a team that is not going to be a particularly high scoring team.
You know? Yeah, it was a little bit of a shock to see that. It wasn't necessarily losing that game, because I don't think anyone really cared that much about the outcome of that game. Or really, you know, of the Portland game. I mean, I was furious when the game ended, and by the time I got back to the car, I just didn't care anymore. But they just looked so bad. And it wasn't bad in a way where they were rusty and that, you know, these guys don't necessarily work together that much. I mean, they just didn't look very good at all until maybe 60 minutes in, and that's worrisome.
Well, since we're talking about preseason, why don't I get your opinion of the Community Shield game? I was pleasantly surprised that as much of the game was shown as was, you know, I was kind of half expecting even less of the game to be shown than what was shown here locally. But, you know, they were cutting away to commercials and they were doing these preview show type of things. But they actually showed a pretty fair amount of the game. They certainly showed enough of the game that I think we saw all but one of the goals happened live. And, you know, I thought that the Sounders looked reasonably good. You know, it was certainly inspired a little bit of confidence to see Freddie Montero have that kind of game. You know, he scores 2 goals, has an assist. All 3 of those were on plays that looked, you know, like the kind of plays you expect Freddie Montero to make. I don't think that, you know, all 3 of them were against a backup goaltender, but I don't necessarily know that any goalkeeper would have saved any of those. It wasn't like he badly misplayed anything. And O'Brien White had a great pass on Montero's 2nd goal. Eric Freeberg also had a nice pass on, I think he may have had 2 assists, although he had at least 1 assist on that. And, you know, Freeberg does give us reason to think that there are some other players on this team that could be pretty good. And, you know, getting back into the depth thing, you know, who do you think is the long-term answer at center mid? I mean, are you convinced that Eric Freeberg may actually be better than Brad Evans at this point?
I like him better. I like watching him better. Brad Evans is the kind of player that does things that don't really get anyone excited, but they still add value. I think that against teams that maybe are a little more defensive, Freeberg is the better option. He looks very much like an attack-minded midfielder. I don't want to say he's, you know, a center attacking mid necessarily, but he looks like somebody that's in there primarily to contribute to the attack. Evans is definitely, like I was saying earlier, more of a box-to-box kind of guy. But he's a good player. The problem is that he's a good player in a way that doesn't get people all that stoked. I think that there's plenty of time for both of them, honestly. I mean, you know, with the number of minutes that are going to be available. But, you know, Evans is basically Super Sturgis. Sometimes that's going to be the preferable thing to have. I think I'd probably feel more comfortable with him against LA, honestly. But, you know, Freeberg is definitely more exciting to watch. And there's, you know, there's some value in that if all things are equal.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that Brad Evans actually looked pretty good at times, at least in terms of his positioning in that game against Colorado while he was in. You know, he was in the right places. He was making good runs. He was, you know, doing the kind of things that you expect Brad Evans to do. And I think that, you know, it's again, you know, almost every game that Brad Evans plays, it's really almost like an eye of the beholder type of situation where you have a lot of fans that see Brad Evans play on, what day was that? Wednesday? Tuesday? Whatever the game was against Colorado. And they go, God, I hate this guy. I just can't stand him. He doesn't do anything. He loses the ball. He X, Y, and Z. And then I'm sure, you know, you talk to Siggy or you talk to, you know, other people that are looking at it from a different angle. And they're just like, oh, no, he's doing exactly what he wanted him to do. He's putting himself in positions to contribute. You know, he's making late runs. He's doing all these various things. And it's, you know, he's one of those players that he definitely does things that aren't easily appreciated. And I'm with you that Erik Friberg is probably the more enjoyable player to watch.
Yeah, you know, Evans is, there's definitely a place for players like that, but man, Friberg just looked so good in that game. The assist that he had to Montero was just ridiculous. He looks like he fits really well with the attacking players, the forwards, and Evans is never going to offer that. And I mean, the easiest thing to quantify in soccer, you know, when you're watching is how goals are created. And they see Freiburg do something like that, and then they see Evans kind of not do anything exciting ever, and except miss horribly. And they, you know, I mean, it's an easy conclusion to make, but I'm willing to sort of go for the appeal to authority here and say, you know, a lot of fairly established and well-respected coaches think that Brad Evans is pretty good, and you know, I'm willing to go along with that. And you know, when you're playing him and Alonso, you're basically playing two defensive mids, just in terms of what they can offer. And sometimes, you know, that's the best way to go. It's not necessarily going to lead to the most exciting game, but 3 points are always exciting, so.
So then I guess let's back up a little bit. Who did you say you wanted to see starting at left mid? You said you'd like to see Brad Evans start in the center and Erik Friberg start out wide is what kind of the thing that you felt you wanted to see?
Yeah, I think that that would be ideal. If, you know, I don't really know how Friberg or Alvaro are with their left foot. So, you know, if Friberg or Alvaro are capable of playing on the left, then yeah, that's what I'd like to see. If not, I guess Rosales, I don't know. I honestly have no answers if one of those two guys isn't the answer.
Well, and as a point of reference, I'll just throw this out there that Zach Wonne has now played with the Sounders for 2 seasons. The Sounders have played 64 matches in that time, including those four playoff games. And Zach Wonne's played in all but two of them, and he's started all but seven of them. He's other than maybe Freddy Montero, he's probably played more. He's gotten more of the time at that position than any player has gotten time at any. I guess maybe James Riley. No, I know James Riley has played more, but part of the reasons there's not a clear backup is because we've never really seen the backup.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the other thing that has to be considered. You know, we can talk about the depth at that position being a problem, and it is, but I want to make it clear that it's not necessarily an indictment on my part, and I don't think it is on your part either, of the way this team is constructed. I mean, there's a salary cap in the league. There are only so many roster spots available, and Zach Iwani has been very, very, very durable. He's been very dependable, and so if you're going to skimp on depth, maybe the place you skimp is the guy that has played in 90% of your games.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good point. And I don't think either one of us are kind of in making an indictment of the Sounders. It's just that and you just realize how quickly that the thin layer that the Sounders or that any MLS teams are kind of built on is that there's just not once you scratch that surface, there's just not a lot there. And I think that goes probably down the board at every on every MLS team is that I don't think that there's a single team in MLS who the backup at every position is a player that you feel like perfectly comfortable going into the, you know, starting a game with. You know, you look at even teams like Real Salt Lake. You know, there are definitely players who are the first backups on that team who their fans really don't want to see. And you know, and I mean, I guess that's probably true at almost probably any soccer league, really. I don't know
Yeah,
if that's the thing that's only MLS.
I think that that's true in pretty much any sport, really. I mean, you know, the Mariners have, even when the Mariners were, you know, watchable and decent, they had players on their roster that were probably one of the 25 best players, you know, in the organization, and I still never wanted to see. Same deal with the Seahawks. You know, I'm sure it's that way in the NBA. Right. It's just the nature of the beast.
So anyway, the first game of the season is coming up on Tuesday. It feels like we may as well talk a little bit about the Galaxy, who are amazingly healthy considering how old the team is. You know, one of the big concerns everyone had about them going into this season is, like, you know, you have a bunch of guys on the wrong side of 30 who are going to be carrying a lot of the workload for them. And yet here they show up and it's, you know, week one, and they're probably as healthy as any team in MLS. You know, granted, it's week one and, you know, any number of things can game preseason in any way you want so that you are sure to have healthy players. But, you know, it is kind of interesting that, you know, here we are at week one and it looks like they have a team that is healthy at the very least. And, you know, it's starting to look like maybe Frankie Hajduk is not necessarily a starter for them and he's more of a veteran backup. And, you know, I don't know, what are your thoughts on the Galaxy? You know, to me, they look a little stronger than I maybe thought they were going to be.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in terms of pure talent in the starting 11, the Galaxy are up there with anyone in the league. I think that, you know, you make a good point about them being healthy. That is definitely surprising. I think that the big worry for them is going to be maybe later in the year. Juan Pablo Angel last year was ridiculous at the beginning of the year. And then he kind of fell off towards the end. And that's kind of been a pattern with him. You know, he's 36 years old. He's never been a big burner speed guy, but, you know, if he loses a step towards the end of the year, it's gonna slow him down. I feel weird saying this because it seems like a heresy almost. I don't really know how important David Beckham is to the Galaxy. I mean, he's definitely a good player, but if I were a Galaxy fan, his durability would be less of a concern to me than maybe some other players. But, you know, the Galaxy are a very good team. They were the best team in the league last year. They're certainly dangerous, especially if, you know, since they are as healthy as they are. And this game does make me a little nervous, I have to say, especially, you know, missing Zakuani, missing Fusito, missing Brad Evans possibly, or at least a fully fit Brad Evans. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of last year's debacle, but, I mean, this is very easily a losable game, and that's not really the way you want to get the season going.
Well, let me ask you this. It's the first game of the season. It's the first game at home. Is a tie an acceptable result, do you think? Or do you think a tie really gets the Sounders off to a less than ideal start, especially considering that they got to come back the next weekend and play at New York, which obviously is not a gimme game either. They won last year, but, you know, New York is certainly expected to be the class of the Eastern Conference, and it's going to be, you know, presumably at a sold out Red Bull Arena. And, you know, is a tie enough in that situation?
Against the Galaxy, yeah, I think so. I mean, losing the first game of the year obviously isn't a good way to get things going. If they lose to the Galaxy, it's not going to be the end of the world. But, you know, you want to take points at home, especially for the Sounders. And a point against the Galaxy, who are, you know, going to be, if not the favorites for the Shield, I think that has to be Real Salt Lake. They're going to be in the discussion for most of the season. And getting a point off of them at home is just fine, especially missing a player as crucial to what you like to do as Steve Zakuani.
No, and I would agree with you that I think if a point is, especially in the context of how the Sounders played against the Galaxy last year, I think a point is probably, you know, an acceptable result. I think that everyone's going to say they want to win, and I don't think a loss is the end of the world, but I would certainly say that a point is acceptable. And believe it or not, I actually think that if they start off the season with two ties, I don't know that you can be too worked up about it. You know, I've heard a couple people say that if they don't come out of the first two games with at least 4 points, that somehow they are in a lot of trouble in their terms of their desires to see the Sounders win a supporter shield. But there are two games that are two of their toughest back-to-back games. They're probably the two toughest back-to-back games off the play all year. And, you know, I just don't know if this was the middle of the season and they got 2 points in that situation, I don't think anyone would give two thoughts about it.
No, that seems a little hasty to me to say that, you know, not taking 4 points from these two games would be a put the supporter shield in doubt. It's a long season. There's
34 games.
Yeah, there's 34 games to play. Yeah, I mean, I you can't really start looking in the table until probably sooner than we started looking at the table last year, I guess, since no one in the world thought that the Sounders were going to make the playoffs except you. And yep. those are two teams that I think a draw is a perfectly acceptable result against. And now I will say this, I think if they somehow manage to take 6 points from those two games, that's huge. But
yeah.
not because of the time of the season it is, just because, hey, you beat two of the better teams in the league, one of them away, that's a pretty big deal. I'd be thrilled with 4 points from these two. I think two is realistic. I think even if they lose both of these games, it's not the end of the world in any...
No, and I think that part of the thing that we sometimes fail to recognize is that last year, part of the reason that their slow start essentially killed their chances of winning the Supporter Shield wasn't so much because of their slow start as much as it was the fact that the Galaxy were, you know, 11-0-1 or whatever it was after their first 12 matches.
Yeah.
And, you know, at some point that's just a reality, and you can, and I don't, there's no reason to ever expect that to happen. And, you know, I 2 years ago, the Sounders were 2 points out of the Supporter Shield, despite only claiming 46 points or whatever it was. And, you know, it's, I certainly don't think we're ever going to see a Supporter Shield one with less than 50 points again, but you know, it does happen. And, you know, two games don't make a season is that's all a long way of saying that.
Yeah. I mean, if another team comes out to a start like the Galaxy got off to last year, the Sounders probably aren't going to win the Supporter Shield. You know, this is the third year of the team in this iteration. It's tough to get to a point where you can do something like that, where you can, you know, go unbeaten in 12 games in 3 years. And if that happens, you say, well, you probably are the best team in the league and deserve to win the Supporter Shield. Congratulations to you. I mean, you can't really be upset about that. You can't do anything about it. So,
right.
Yeah.
So circling back around to our little discussion about the Galaxy, the Galaxy got that start last year basically without David Beckham. I mean, he didn't really play with them until the last, month of the season. Maybe you only played the last two or three games of the season.
Yeah.
So obviously this is a team that is perfectly capable of winning without David Beckham. I guess the question is, what do you see as their biggest weakness at this point?
Aside from age, I mean, that's obviously, I think, the biggest thing. If Juan Pablo Angel gets injured or, you know, completely falls off the cliff, they're in trouble. Aside from that, their defense, I think, is a step below the rest of the team. I think that they're going to miss Kovalenko. Obviously, he's not a defender, but, you know, he's definitely a defensive-minded player. I don't think that they're going to be a bad defensive team. It's just worse than their attack. And I guess the roundabout way of saying they don't really have a lot of weaknesses necessarily. They're a very good team top to bottom. They don't have the depth that maybe you would expect out of an elite team like that, but that's because they have a lot of their resources allocated to very good starting players. I don't think that the Galaxy are great at any one thing necessarily, but they're very good at a lot of different things. And that's what's allowed them to be consistently good for so long.
So let me ask you this. There's a fair amount of debate. I don't know, maybe debate's the wrong word, but there's a fair amount of discussion out there about what the best way to use Landon Donovan is. You know, Chad Barrett, the presumption is that Chad Barrett will be starting alongside Juan Pablo Angel at forward, and that Landon Donovan will be out wide. You know, but there's a quite, you know, Chad Barrett is obviously not a world-class player. He had 7 goals last year. He doesn't seem like he's a bad player, but he's probably not someone who's inspiring a lot of confidence. I mean, what do you think as being prepared for the Galaxy? I mean, what gives you more, what scares you more, Landon Donovan as a midfielder or Landon Donovan as a forward?
I think as a midfielder, and, you know, I really don't think the Galaxy have a choice in that matter. Playing him and Angel at forward would kind of seem to to create some problems. I don't, you know, they're both goal scorers. Donovan is more than that, obviously, but, you know, they both like to score, and they're both capable of scoring a lot of goals. If you've got both of them working together, you know, up top, I can see that creating some issues. Out wide, Donovan can affect the games in more ways. He's scary doing pretty much everything. He's a fairly decent defender for an attack-minded midfielder. He's got great delivery. He's great on free kicks. He's good cutting in at goal. He's dangerous from long range. He can't do as much of that stuff as a forward. If Angel wasn't on, you know, with the Galaxy, then I think that, yeah, he's a little scarier as a forward. But with Angel to deliver the ball to from out wide, he's very scary to me in that situation.
And I guess the last big question about the Galaxy is, I mean, they're pretty much the same team in a lot of ways that they were last year, Ford being the glaring exception. You know, what do you think is the drop-off from, or is there a drop-off from Edson Buttle to Juan Pablo Angel? I mean, is that, do you feel like that's almost like an even swap, or do you feel like that's a, there, or is it an upgrade? I mean, what's your opinion on in terms of that swap?
Even if you're just going in terms of pure talent, you know, aside from the fact that Buttle is younger, maybe a little more in slightly better shape just by virtue of being younger, I still think that Angel, on the balance of things, is a downgrade. Buttle is, he kind of developed into more of a complete forward rather than just a striker. He could do a lot of other things that Angel can't do. I think Angel is a better pure goal scorer than pretty much anyone in the league, really. But that's a lot of what he offers you, is a lot of his value is tied up in that. With that being said, I don't necessarily think that that's as big a deal to the Galaxy as it maybe it would be to other teams to trade, you know, a more complete forward like Buttle for a striker like Angel. And, you know, I think that maybe there will be a slight drop-off that's discernible in their play, but I don't think it's going to be extreme, you know, by any means. And it might make them slightly more dangerous, really, because, you know, Angel can score a lot of ways. He's very dangerous in every phase of the attacking game as a threat at goal. And Buttle wasn't necessarily the same way. So, you know, I think that Angel is less of a talent, but in a weird way might actually make their attack better.
So I guess, you know, it's funny because I think that's probably the general consensus opinion, that there's probably some drop off from Buttle to Angel. But the irony of that, of course, is that Buttle last year made about $800,000 less than Juan Pablo Angel. And we don't know for sure that if the Galaxy had offered, maybe they did offer him a designated player contract this year, but from all the reports I've read, I've never seen anything that suggested that the Galaxy were basically pulling out all the stops to keep him, and that ultimately Edson Buttle walked, not necessarily because he was getting paid so much more in Germany, but because it was his last chance. But you got to imagine that if they had thrown, like, offered him a designated player contract and, you know, thrown $1 million, it said, okay, we'll pay you $1 million. You got to imagine that they would have been able to keep Edson Buttle. And we don't know what Juan Pablo ultimately signed for, but it was as a designated player. You know, I'm just wondering if that ends up being a major miscalculation on their part, because it seemed like they were trying to figure out a way to have Angel, Buttle, and Donovan and Beckham, four players that were, for all intent, you know, maybe not being paid at designated player contracts, but certainly four players that were expected to perform like designated players. And it seems like maybe they were trying to have their cake and eat it too, so to speak. And they ended up, you know, downgrading as a result. And instead of having this embarrassment of riches, you know, they just have, you know, a very good forward, but not necessarily someone who's great next to him. I mean, it would have been, you know, it seems like they kind of made a choice to have Angel instead of Buttle.
Yeah, and I mean, if there was legitimately a way they could have kept Buttle, they're insane to have not done it for a lot of reasons. Angel can't have much more than a year or two left, I don't think, especially because, you know, that's been fairly widely speculated that he'd like to go back to Argentina to finish his career. You know, he might not have that chance, but I think it's definitely something he would like to do. I'd like to say that I can't imagine them making that decision, but to be honest, that team has done some kind of weird things in the past that, that didn't really make a whole lot of sense. You know, you could maybe make the argument that, about star power, but I mean, Juan Pablo Angel was a good striker in England. He was a great striker in Argentina, but you know, it's not like he's a household name. I'd wager that Edson Buttle is equally popular in terms of, you know, recognition. And I have to think that maybe they had some idea that, that, you know, if Buttle got the opportunity to go to Europe, he was going to go.
Yeah. I mean, that may be, I mean, who knows? It's, you know, but that being said, you know, it wasn't like he got a, I mean, I think it was probably a smart and understandable move for him to go to Europe, especially if it was, you know, a matter of not a whole lot of money, because he's, you know, 29 years old and he's not going to get a lot more opportunities to go to Europe. And he's kind of, you know, one of the things, it's funny because I think Edson Buttle has been one of these players who has never quite gotten the level of respect that I think he probably deserved. And, you know, he's been a little bit of a head case and he's had some issues. And I understand that he's been far from a model citizen in some ways, or especially early in his career. But the guy has scored over 100 MLS goals.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's had, you know, I think at least three or four seasons where he's scored more than 10 goals in a season. I mean, he's performed really well at almost every stop that he's been at. And his strike rate is right up there with almost any player. Certainly his strike rate is right up there with any of the players that have scored 100 goals in MLS. And, you know, he's a guy that for whatever reason doesn't seem to really grab the attention of people. I mean, Bob Bradley seemed like he wasn't really that enthused about using him on the U.S. national team when, you know, every time he played, he seemed like he does well. Maybe he doesn't dominate, but certainly wasn't doing any worse than the Robbie Finleys of the world. And, you know, I'm definitely rooting for him. I'd like to see him do well. He's a, you know, it's one of the things that's kind of funny is that you don't really necessarily think of him as being one of these soccer nerds, but from all the reports I've ever read, I mean, the guy basically was born, he was named after Pele.
Right.
And he grew up playing soccer as his primary sport his whole life. So it's understandable why he would want to at least go test his skills in Europe.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what, you know, who doesn't want to, even if it is at the second division of Germany, you know, the fact is that there's a lot of people seeing him play there that weren't going to see him play in MLS.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if he plays well in the second division in Germany, he's still young enough that, you know, a team in a first division would consider bringing him up to the first division. And, you know, that's where you make the silly money. There's that to take into consideration. I have to think that the Galaxy knew that he was probably going to be going to Europe, and that's why they didn't want to offer him a designated player contract and then take the risk of, you know, if he accepts it, we really want Angel. And, you know, I've got to think that they knew that was coming. Because
no, you might be right. Maybe it's a false choice that I'm presenting, but it's still kind of I never got the sense that the Galaxy were, you know, pulling out all the stops to try to keep him in town.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's possible, you know, this is probably naive of me, but it's possible that they didn't really do that because he said, you know, I want to go to Europe and I don't want the fans to hate me. I don't know.
You're right. I mean, that's as plausible of a scenario as what I'm positing. Well, we're getting to a point where we probably need to wrap it up, but I figure this is our last preseason, our first podcast of the year, but it's also our last preseason podcast. And if we're going to do any kind of predictions, I guess now is the time. So
yeah.
Who's your one team that you think is going to end up being a bit of a surprise this year in MLS?
I would have been surprised to say this a couple weeks ago, but I think that Portland might actually surprise some people. They've got some problems. You know, they're definitely a work in progress. But, you know, they really impressed me in the games that I watched during the preseason. I don't think they're ever going to blow anybody out of the water by playing beautiful football or anything. But I don't think that they're going to make a real push for the playoffs. I don't see them being a playoff team. But I think they're going to be a lot better than people expect them to be. I think they're definitely going to be respectable. In terms of teams that, you know, legitimately have a shot at getting into the playoffs or maybe challenging for consideration, at least in the Supporters' Shield. I think Houston will be better, and I think that DC will be a lot better. And I guess you asked for one team, and I gave you three, so...
Sorry. Well, that's okay. I won't hold that to you. My team that I think is going to end up being a little bit more of a surprise than people are expecting is I actually really think Chivas USA could have a decent year. I'm not going to sit here and say that they are a lock for the playoffs or that they're going to contend for the Porter Shield, but I really like a lot of the moves that they've made including this move to get Nick LaBraca for Alan Gordon. And it's not that Nick LaBraca is any great shakes, but I just don't know that Alan Gordon was a particularly useful piece for them. And to get another MLS player who is going to add a little bit of depth for them and kind of bolster their midfield, I think.
Yeah.
I like the moves that they've made. You know, they brought in a lot of guys that have MLS experience. You know, Heath Pierce was a great pickup. Tristan Bowen, I think, could end up being a really good pickup. You know, you go Jimmy Conrad might not. He's obviously on the tail end of his career, but he appears to have something left. You know, they have a nice mixture of old and young, and guys that know how to play in the league. And I'm still one of these people that thinks that MLS is not like other leagues in a lot of ways, and I think that there's a value in getting MLS veterans. And I think that the biggest problem with the way that the Whitecaps and the Timbers are building their teams, and certainly I could be proven wrong, but I think the biggest problem is that both of them are relying really heavily on guys that have no MLS experience. The Whitecaps especially, but you look at the Timbers, and I'm not trying to say that they're going to be bad. I agree with you. I think that they could probably contend for a playoff spot. But, they pick up Jack Jewsbury, who is a decent midfielder. But they pick him up, and then a couple weeks later, he's their captain. I mean, it just makes me wonder, what was the plan going? I mean, it's like every time I think I figured out the way that the Timbers are building their team, they do something that is kind of head scratching. I mean, it looks like Kariya Gilbert, who was supposed to be this kind of flashy right back or left back. He was a fullback in any case. He was expected to be a starter for them. And it looks like he's already been signed. He hasn't made any training appearances with them yet. And now it looks like he's having visa issues and he might never make it over here. And certainly it's hard to imagine him starting at this point early in the season. And, I just think that they're putting a lot of faith in guys that are coming up from, not just the Division II, but actually guys from their PDL team. And it's, and most of those guys are depth, and I'm really not trying to just kind of bag on Portland, but if they make the playoffs, if they end up doing well, they really will have, proven they're the smartest guys in the room. It's just that I'm all skeptical of people who seem to be operating under the assumption that they're the smartest guys in the room.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair point. I mean, Portland is definitely doing something different, and the Whitecaps are too, in terms of how they develop their team. You can get away with doing that, in MLS, because if you finish at the bottom of the league, finish at the bottom of the league. It's not, it's not the end of the world. And I don't think the expectations are that high. So,
I would offer that I do think that one of the problems that Portland could end up facing is that their expectations, at least in Portland, I get the sense are actually quite high because,
really?
I mean, John Spencer and Gavin Wilkinson have basically been talking about how they don't see themselves in his expansion team. They see themselves as a promoted team, which, whatever, that's fine. They have a right to say that. But they're saying, you talk to their fan, at least some of their fans, and they're like, oh, yeah, I think we could contend for a supporter shield or a playoff spot. And it's, I'll say this, is that I don't think most Portland fans are going to be satisfied with, a point a game. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I they – I would be surprised if they made the playoffs. So to hear that there are people that, you know, think that they could challenge for the Supporters Shield is a bit of a surprise. And you know, I'm sure that people, you know, listening to that with maybe different allegiances would say that that's just because I'm a Sounders fan. But you know, it's really important to me to try to be objective about teams like Portland and teams like Vancouver because they are rivals. And you know, there's this sort of this belief, I think, amongst a lot of Sounders fans that beating Portland is a birthright. And, you know, that's not always going to be the case. I mean, at some point in the future, probably the near future, Portland is going to have a much better team than Seattle. That's just kind of the way the league goes. But, yeah, I don't see them being an elite team this year, and I'm not really sure why someone else would, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's kind of the point I'm making. It's not that I think that Portland is going to be bad, and I actually think that they are trying an interesting experiment. I just think that from some of the stuff I've heard coming out of their front office, I'm just starting to wonder if their expectations and their, you know, and maybe it's all just talk, but I don't think it is. I mean, I kind of get the sense that these guys, I mean, because you don't hear the Whitecaps saying we're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, they say more like, you know, we'd like to contend for the playoffs, but you know, they're not, you know, they seem to be very realistic about what lies ahead. I don't think that they're expecting to be the worst team in the league. Obviously, I don't think any team expects to be the worst team in the league, but I think that they have this perception that they'll try to stay competitive. And if they can squeak into the playoffs, they'll squeak into the playoffs. Whereas I just don't get the sense that the Timbers are setting themselves up to be satisfied with, you know, contending for a playoff spot.
Well, you know, I mean, they know more about their players than I do. I'll say that. Well, much.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, watching them at Starfire, I thought that they absolutely deserved the win, but that they weren't necessarily the better team, if that makes any sense. They just did exactly what they needed to do to win that game. I don't think that they would be able to do that week in and week out. And I guess they don't have to, you know, to make the playoffs, but I think you get what I'm saying in that the way that they set up to play against the Sounders that night was the way a team that feels like they have got to play a very bunker and counter sort of style set up to play. And that's not always going to be effective. It was that night, but it's not always. I don't know. I just, especially in the Western Conference, if they were in the Eastern Conference, then yeah, they could legitimately have a shot at the playoffs, but because man, the Eastern Conference is bad. But I don't know. We'll see. And if you know what, if they end up making the playoffs or being a lot better than we're expecting them to be, and they somehow managed to finish above the Sounders, then yeah, they were right. I will be the first person to say that if it happens. But I don't think I expect it to.
No, I'm with you. So I think that's probably about all we have to do for the first episode of No Sadietes. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show. We're going to try to make this a regular thing. I don't know that we'll do it every week, but certainly we'd like to do it at least every month and maybe a few times a month, and hopefully we'll be able to get a working schedule at some point. But certainly you'll be able to read us as much as you would like to read us at Sounder at Heart. We'll be there all season, and at SB Nation and at 7500 to Holt. So thanks a lot for listening, and hopefully we'll see you back next time.